And this hour, Stan Dale stays with us as we talk about his research into Atlantis. Also, his wife Holly has a book coming out in a month called Prophetic Perils, End Time Events Revealed. We'll get a little glimpse from Stan on that, too, when we come back with your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Stan Dale, with us, of course. Stan, I have always heard, at least in my earlier days, that Atlantis may have been stacked with crystal power and energy and all kinds of things. Any idea what they might have possessed?
No, not really. Some of the archaeological discoveries over in, well, just about 12 miles from the Poseidon's Island that I found, they've recently uncovered stones or columns in a like a temple there that were coated with copper, which is what they said the Atlanteans did. And this wasn't the Atlantis; it was post-Atlantis period by about 200-300 years. But they did also find that those types of technology that were like the lead-acid batteries found up in Iraq, just north of there.
The Baghdad batteries, right?
That's right. That's right. And what happened was in Bahrain, where they were doing the digs, probably about 1987, they started finding that when they went deeper than 80 feet into the, undergrowth here, or the land of Bahrain, that they were getting more and more advanced technology. And the sheikh in control said, no, that's it. All the European archaeologists out of the pool. We'll do it ourselves. And now they have the Bahrain Museum, which shows a golden bull's head that's more like an auroch, the big-horned African cattle we have now, which was prominent in Atlantis. So that was either, I think it was smelted and cast because it's pitted. But it does show that there was more advanced technology as you went down. They've been uncovering it and putting up in the museum, which is probably going to be part of the tourism attraction to the Gulf states over there. Hey, on that line, in the search for Atlantis, they were looking for this magical metal called orichalcum, and nobody knew what it was. And I found not only what it was, but where they mined it. Over close to where I was telling you about those Atlantis 1, Atlantis 2, Red Sea, subsea mines are going to dig, they are go east of there into Jeddah and then into the desert just a bit from Jeddah to a mine that is famous. It's been famous since 3000 B.C. and was even rumored to be one of the places that Solomon got his gold from. It's called the Mahd-ad-Dahab Mine. Mahd-ad-Dahab, and they got and still get gold, silver, and all kinds of things. But one of the things that they say in the papers from the mine themselves is that the gold occurs in quartz veins, but they're in what's called rhyolites and tuffs that extend over about 1 square kilometer, and the veins contain these things: copper, iron, lead, and zinc sulfide. Now, if you look, those things together form in a combination of, say, like 80 to 85% copper, 5% tin, 5% lead, 5% zinc. These things are what make red brass or gunmetal. It's alloy number C23000, and it's composed of, 85% copper, 5% tin, blah, blah, blah. And it resists the corrosion from seawater. It's red, and it's brilliant because you can beat it and shape it around objects like stone, like they did in Atlantis. If you look at slide number 23 on that page, you'll see what orichalcum looked like. It was primarily copper, and because it was more rare than gold in those days, because to find that combination of things that you could put and expose to seawater and not get corrosion was really wonderful, and it was beautiful. So they even paved their streets and made dinner plates and stuff and glasses from the orichalcum in Atlantis. Because it was about 5% lead, I suspect that led to a lot of insanity or sickness, mental sickness in the community, because they were getting lead poisoning from what they were walking on barefoot and eating from. But anyway, that's just an aside. I want to get a couple points in here for people to look at what I've got there, because there's a pyramid I found, a squat pyramid in the middle of the desert there.
How tall?
I'd say it's like maybe 150, 200 feet tall.
Okay, little.
Well, it is little, and it's got right in the center of it a temple, which is round stones like Stonehenge. And that's what's, you know, really quite unique about that. I'm just looking to see here if I put that up there as an image. Just give me a second. It's not.
If not, send it to us later.
I'll send that to you later because it's. I've even done an animation fly around it in Google Earth. You can see it has four ridges leading up to the top of this where they have these Stonehenge-type structures. If you look at around image 32 through 38.
Now, don't forget, Stan, people are driving in cars right now. They
can't look. They're going to hear you on replay, aren't they?
They may, yeah.
Well, they better. Anyway, I've got places where Stonehenge and like Gilgal, which is the Circle of the Giants in the Glen Heights now where Og the Giant lives. I mean, L.A. will tell you about that, I'm sure. But these are almost identical copies of Poseidon's Island, which has three sets of water land around a center island and a channel cut through to them. And if you look on that show images page, as I said, those images, you'll see even in India that there are symbols showing a man, a tall giant man and a small earth woman next to these symbols. And I'm sure that Stonehenge and all these that I'm telling you about in Spain and Italy, and it, even in the Anasazi and the Hopi stone carvings are there. That's all on the page I'm showing you. These are in remembrance of Poseidon's Island. And you can walk over the top of it. It's there. It's called Damam, D-A-M-M-A-M, on the coast of the Persian Gulf. That was Poseidon's Island. You know, it's only place in the whole area that has water underneath it bulging up, forming what's called the Damam Dome of fresh water from two or three aquifers.
Why wasn't there obvious evidence of this implosion of this meteor? Look how long it's taken you to find it.
Well, it was just one of those interesting things where it was covered up by the sediment between Sri Lanka and the tip of India when it split apart and was being moved up like that. But because I was looking for it, I did find it. Now, the pattern it makes, something like that, like the band of sea, it makes this very distinct pattern signature. And I've given animation and arrows showing on the planet there, image number 7, your animation number 7. You can look and see. I found four more and one extra one, which was already found recently and approved by modern, you know, scientists. On the southern tip of Argentina, it's the El Tanin asteroid. I think I talked to you about that in May on the show. It leaves a peculiar footprint in the seabed, you know, as it moves the seabed along. And I found one in the middle of China. I found one in Indonesia. I found two, one at Chile and Peru's border, another one further down in Chile. There's some I'm still working with in Central America and in the islands to the east of that. Once they see that this footprint identifies a large meteor impact, the scientific community is going to go ape finding all these impacts.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Look.
That's a great discovery.
It is. I'm telling you, I'm so excited, almost breathless about even talking about it now. Image number 1, I think, up there that I've got is of a thing that NASA produced showing the dent that this meteor made underneath the tip of India and the raised area it made over in New Guinea today, where it shoved over 6 million square miles of stuff underneath and pushed Indonesia up and to make a raised area over in the Western Pacific where we have all these earthquakes today. And I found that every one of these meteor impacts at where it stopped, the ridge it formed as it shoved up the stuff ahead of it, is where we get the majority of our earthquakes today.
Now, do you think mountains were caused by impacts?
Not all of them, no.
Okay.
But certainly some of them, yes.
And Stan, before we take calls, quick question about Holly's book, because I'm going to book her on the program when that book comes out, but Prophetic Perils.
We released it at the conference, so it's out now.
It's out now. Okay.
Now, right. You're going to have to twist some arms, because maybe we'll do it together, but she just, you know, she's a bit shy about doing radio.
Oh, come on. She's been on before with me.
I know she has. I know. I'll talk to her about it.
Well, give me the Cliff Notes version of what it's all about.
Well, it's about earth changes. It's about increased wildfires, weird weather growing wilder, changes in the sun, famine that's coming again, and the depletion of our water aquifers all over the planet, tornadoes, volcanoes, earthquakes, all those things, the stats about what's happening to that, changes in society, how people are at each other's throats, and the rise of wars and threats of wars, the rise of pagans and witchcraft, things like that.
Right down our alley.
Well, look,
we got to fight this evil. You know what?
We do. She has some good news there at the end. But have you heard about the Ickley cities around the world, where they build all these cities, or the making cities?
Where nobody's there, right?
Say again.
The cities that nobody's there.
Well,
empty cities.
Well, that might be part of it. Yes, because they're trying to concentrate us under the agenda, you know, into cities and get us out of the countries. Countryside, and she lists and has a map that I think I've got on there. Yes, I do. It's a large map, so you can see the 9,000 cities that are part of this one world order
push
that we know about. And basically, they want you to live in a little apartment in the cities and get off the land in the country. That's why they're turning everything into, you know, reserved wildlands, and
they're buying up everything.
Yeah, and they're doing stupid stuff like this. Is a bicycle path right down the middle of your town now, then, so you can't drive here anymore. And that's happened here in Pueblo, where we live. She talks about the thinning veil between the universes, you know, between God's place and us, and how things are coming through here, or are about to come through, that aren't really quite nice things. And, you know, just look, there's 20 chapters and three big appendices in there. It's 536 pages long. It weighs about 4 pounds. So she doesn't do anything by halves. It's really mighty meaty. And I'm not doing it justice by trying to summarize the 20, you know, chapters.
Happy ending?
Yeah. She does give a message of hope and beyond that in chapter 20. And in each chapter, she starts it off with the scriptures that talk about the events that she's going to talk about that are happening now.
All right, let's take some calls for you.
All right.
West of the Rockies, Reba is at Colville, Washington, to get us started. Hi, Reba, go ahead.
Well, I tell you, it's a real pleasure to get on and be able to say thank you to Sam Deo. Years ago, when Art was on this program, I had come on the radio, because back in 84, 85, I had actually seen in my mind's eye a terrible quake that would take place in the Seattle area. I didn't know the full extent of it, but I knew it would be, you know, do a lot of damage. Then I had gone on the radio with Art, because I'm an earth sensitive, and I was feeling extremely ill, and I knew that there was going to be a quake over there very shortly. And but he tried to nail me down on a date, and I couldn't give him a date. I told him, I said, based on how I feel, it will be very soon. And with this, I told him, I said, it'll be on a bright, beautiful, sunshiny day. There will be children in the streets, and, you know, trying to give him an idea. But I said, it's going to do a lot of damage. And I was really concerned about people not having water put up and being prepared. And that was my whole purpose for going on the radio and letting them know. And I told Art, it'll be so bad that I said it will be felt all the way over here where I am, which is in Northeast Washington, way up in the corner. I'm probably about 70 miles, 78 miles, something like that, north of Spokane, Washington. And anyway, Art kind of poo-pooed it, and because I couldn't pin it down to an exact date. But 2 weeks later, that earthquake did take place. And Stan was on the radio at the time that I was doing this, I guess, forecast. And there was another man on, too, but I don't remember his name. And anyway, the night of that quake, which did do a lot of damage, it was felt all the way up here, all the way over to Utah. It rang.
How big was it, Reba? Do you remember?
No, I don't. It was big. I know that you can bring it up online.
Where was the epicenter? Where was the epicenter so we could track it?
It was just south of Seattle, I believe.
Okay.
It took out the Alaskan Way viaducts in South Seattle. That's why they're constantly trying to drill this new hole to make a new freeway, which is never going to happen. That's a disaster waiting to happen. But anyway, In parts of our Olympia capital, did a lot of damage to that. The King Dome, it did damage. The railroad depot down in town lost part of its roofing, and bricks and everything fell. It was pretty bad. But anyway, Stan, that night that after the quake had taken place, was on the radio with Art. And anyway, and he said, "Well, remember what that woman said?" And I remember Art replying something like, "Oh yeah," you know. But I had predicted that in January. I was number 66 on the predictions.
Good. What year was that, Reba? Was that 2001?
Yes.
Yep. This was called the Nisqually earthquake.
Yes.
That was
that's it.
Yep. And 6.8. Pretty good size.
It was, and it was close to the surface. And the sicker I feel, the worse they are, and I feel them all over the world. And the more loss of life there is, the worse I am. It's gotten to the point now where it affects my heart, and I can go into full atrial fib.
Are you feeling anything now?
I have been all day.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's been really bad, and heart palpitations and everything. So, I didn't know anything about this, what was going on in the caldera. I don't have TV. I don't listen to the radio much except to catch the weather.
And our show, right?
Yes, every
okay.
night.
Good girl.
Every single night. So, yeah, I swear by you. And but anyway, yeah, if I had to pay for the education that I've received from coast to coast, I'd be up for national.
You'd have that PhD. Well, before the break, Stan, do you remember this quake?
No, I got to admit, I've seen so many of them, I kind of forget.
Yeah, this one was 2001, hit on February 28th, 6.8 magnitude, and it hit around the Puget Sound area, Olympia, parts of Oregon, got it, Canada.
I'm more concerned about what's coming. That Richter 9 Plus is just offshore there.
Richter 9 Plus is devastating, isn't it?
Absolutely, and it's coming. It's a worn-out phrase, but it's not if, but when. And USGS has been giving people warnings and running exercises, so pay attention.
Stan, quick 30 seconds before the break, but you've got a nice offer going for our coast-to-coast listeners on some of your books. Quickly tell us what that is.
Right. Go to our website there. You can go to the main website and see it, standeo.com, S-T-A-N-D-E-Y-O.com, or to the images page, which is up. There's a place at the very top where you can click and get this offer. The code you will need, the coupon code to give you 25% off everything, is George 2016.
That's pretty inventive.
Yeah, original, isn't it? Anyway, it's easy. George 2016 and, 2016. And if you'll put that in the coupon part of your shopping cart, then whatever you've ordered there, any of the books and CDs that are there, up until midnight, the 31st of July, we'll turn it off after that.
Thanks, Stan. I appreciate it. 25% off at least on that and his other products. We're going to come back and take final calls with Stan Dale next on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, Stan Deo and Richard Shaw join me to talk about their Watcher series. They've got another one coming out. It is a doozy. Stan Deo with us now. We're going to take calls with Stan in just a moment. Those of you on hold, we will get to you. Stan, where does your research continue to take you in this quest for Atlantis? What do you do next? What can you do next?
There are just so many things that I'm going to have to write a book, Vindicator Scrolls Volume 2. I just cannot convey it all over radio shows and interviews, just too much. But one thing I want to point people to is something called the Keyhole Formations in Saudi Arabia. Get on the Internet and look for that. You'll see in my images page, 19 and 20, that I found over 1,400 of them, and they are exact scale replicas of the channel and the Poseidon's Island. The channel leads into it. I've scaled them down and put them on those images so you can see.
And explain what you mean by keyholes.
They look like a keyhole. It's a long, about a 200-foot long series of black volcanic stone in a straight line leading up to a set of circles, which is Poseidon's Island. And that's the male or Poseidon's figure. And then we found that there's the female figure for the island itself, for Kleito, his wife, because that's where he met her and had children and everything. And it has two, like, stone formations with little gaps, bridges in between them to represent the land bridges around the island. And these match perfectly. When you just scale them down to the picture I've got, they match perfectly the ratios of Poseidon's Island and the channel. And it solves a lot of mysteries as to why those monuments were made and where they were made by the giants and the hybrids. So it's just one of the many things that I'll have to just write the book soon.
So you think, though, that Noah was an Atlantean?
Yep, I do.
Wow.
No doubt about it.
Amazing. And that the craft, his boat, still out there on Mount Ararat?
Oh, the geologist, Edmonds, that I was talking to, he was telling me that he's friends with a particular corporate executive there in Turkey. I won't name the name right now because things are a bit tense over there.
Yeah, you don't want them to get him.
But, no, he had information, this company executive, senior executive, had information about Noah's Ark. And what I had thought was a geosyncline, which is a natural geological formation that looked like a boat. He said, no, it's the real thing. They've done, sounding, and they are convinced that that's Noah's Ark because of all the anchor stones, the huge, 20-ton stones with holes through them that were used by Noah to anchor the boat, during the storms of that year he was afloat. Anyway, Earl Edmonds said that, it's real. I don't know what more I can do. I guess the good Lord will inspire me if I'm supposed to put that in the next book. But it is there.
Keep at it.
I've been close to the research on that for probably 20 or 30 years with various teams that have been looking at it. And it's possible that that's it.
Keep at it. Let's go to Sedona, Arizona. Blair's with us. Hello, Blair. Welcome.
Thanks, George.
Sure.
Dan Dale, I had the opportunity to microphone you up 20 years ago for a Cheyenne Turner Eclectic Viewpoint presentation in Dallas,
right.
Texas.
And
you were the first person with a national security clearance that actually came out. And so I've always remembered that. Thank you for your bravery and your patriotism.
Thank you, Blair. Appreciate that. I really do.
Velikovsky's Worlds in Collision. It sounds like there's similar theory to yours. And I also wanted to ask you, I'm currently reading the new Shirley MacLaine book, Above the Line, where she's on the Canary Islands, which she believes are the mountaintops of ancient Atlantis. I was wondering if you could clear that up for me.
Well, actually, as I was saying earlier in the show, Blair, the Poseidon's Island for Atlantis was only one of several settlements made by these aliens or parallel worlds or fallen angels, whatever. Even Plato says there were numerous sons of God that came to Earth and took portions of the Earth all over the planet, the landmass, as their own and developed it. That's why we have a similarity in Asia of the pyramid structure to Central America and South America and to Egypt. And so she may well be right that it's part of that particular colonization of the planet, which the God of Gods that they speak of in the Bible wasn't happy about them crossbreeding with the human stock here and some animals as well, as you can see in the Egyptian pantheon of little g gods. Not that I side with everything that Shirley MacLaine would say, but I do recognize there are signs of the advanced civilization, the same ones that built the Atlantean site, all over the planet. So in that respect, what she's looking at might be parts of outposts of that. I mean, even Santorini, after the flood thing, Santorini Island has frescoes on the wall of the palace they found there. They got same colored stones that was on Poseidon's Island, and the bull frescoes showing how they worshipped a bull and stuff. And we know that every herd of cattle on the planet, its DNA structure dates back or tracks back to the Fertile Crescent there, which was part of Atlantis where they started the bull worship.
Stan, Edgar Cayce said that the Atlanteans fled to Egypt, Central America, and elsewhere. What do you think of that?
There were sites all over the place, and so they might have gone to other places that they knew that they had their brothers and sisters, settlements. So it's quite possible. The only thing I find in Casey's readings that I'm challenged by at the moment, I can't prove it one way or the other, is that he said that the Atlanteans flew aircraft which used crystalline power in these towers, and they flew between the towers using the energy. It may well be. Maybe the Stonehenge-type structures that are all over the planet are kind of a sign of the technology. I don't know. But so, yeah, with what you said about as far as them escaping, I do think they did. Yeah, some of them.
All right, let's go to the phones again. Wyckoff, New Jersey, Edward's turn on Coast to Coast with Stan Dale. Go ahead, Edward.
The documentation concerning the location of Atlantis is really no mystery. Plato documented this in his two dialogues, Critias and Timaeus. The most important book by Ignatius Donnelly gives ample explanations of where Atlantis was and many of the things that happened there. Edgar Casey's readings tell us where Atlantis was in the middle of what is now the Atlantic Ocean. A more recent book by Charles Berlitz continues this the scientific research about Atlantis. The pyramids in Egypt and in the Yucatan Peninsula, the idea behind those originated in the island continent. The Great Pyramid in Egypt was constructed by colonists from Atlantis. The Great Pyramid was constructed as a monument to Atlantis. It was covered with limestone blocks with hieroglyphics, which were stripped off by the Arabs at a later time, but those hieroglyphics contained the history of Atlantis. And the crystal skull that was found in the Yucatan also was an artifact in Atlantis. So there's no doubt about where Atlantis was, and that if you want to know the truth about Atlantis, you need to begin with that documentation and not go on with wild theories about other places of the planet, including Greenland, Antarctica, or the dark side of the moon.
Nobody said the dark side of the moon, to be sure. Stan, you want to react to that?
No, it sounds like a man that really hasn't studied the documentation well enough. The Mid-Atlantic location is a non-event because the Mid-Atlantic wasn't there, before the continent split. And when they split in the catastrophic upheaval, the subsurface of the mantle welled up between North America and Europe. There's nothing there. There's just nothing there. And I do allow for other sites of the advanced civilizations around the planet because even the Bible and non-canon type books about it, like the Book of Jubilees, say that several hundred angels came to Earth in the Middle East, in the Arabian Peninsula, in Mount Hermon, which is just up the hill a bit from Damascus in Syria. So Robert's wrong. I'll just say, Robert, you're wrong, and you don't know what you're talking about.
The one thing that I think everybody can agree on, Stan, is that some kind of horrendous calamity occurred on this planet a long time ago.
Sure.
I mean, something horrendous happened.
It had to be big. I mean, I've even used NASA documentation and formulas and even talked to one astronaut about some of these things, about how much energy was required to move the thin film of the Earth's mantle to move a continent up and form the Himalayan mountains. Now, that was a case where the impact did form mountain range. And, maybe all the mountain ranges are a result of that. I doubt it, but certainly they might be a result of the plate movements after the impact, which I guess stems back to, did it cause that? So I don't know.
I look in an area in L.A. near, the San Fernando Valley, and you've got mountains kind of all around it. And it looks like an asteroid may have plopped right down in the middle, pushed up all the debris to become mountains around it. And then there's this middle section, which, I don't know, it just looks like something may have hit there a long time ago. What do you think?
I'll have a look at that later. I'm still cataloging the finds I'm getting. I try to find the impact site, which sometimes is kind of disguised with the mud of the ocean covering it over a bit, but right now I'm working at Central America and just east of there along the coast of South America, and I'll move up the coast here shortly toward California. So you think L.A., the whole basin there, might be part of an impact?
Yeah, just take a look at that for me.
Okay, well, I'll do that. Let's see here. I've got to pull up the map here.
While you're doing that, let's go to our first-time caller, Tyler, in Knoxville, Iowa. Hey, Tyler, go ahead.
Hey, I just want to tell you I've been listening to you for about, I'd say, 7-8 years.
Well, thank you.
I tell you, I've heard some really good stories and heard a lot of good guests you've had on here. And I race out here. I race sprint car at the Knoxville Raceway.
Oh, super.
Sprint car capital of the world out here, and we don't hear too much about you. And I'd love to get more of, you know, you known around this area and a lot of your guests, you know, because I think it's very important that all the knowledge you bring
Indeed.
To the show needs to be well more put out into the streets and in the Midwest. But I just had a big fascination with these two meteors that has exploded in our atmosphere, like over the, I think it was what, Pacific or Atlantic Ocean not too long ago, and then the one over Russia
not
too long ago. And then I've had a big, big peeve on this Planet X, you know, and I just want to get your take on that. And, like, everybody talks about, you know, all these impacts we've had on Earth and everything, but, like, really, you know, when it happens, you know, if we have one of these things land in the water, you know, land in, you know, somewhere on land, you know, what's it really going to be like? You know, what's the changes that we're going to face, you know, 2016 now going forward? You know, I want to get all your takes
okay.
on that. Like I said, I race out here in the Midwest, and I'd love to get each and every one of your guests and, you know, involved in a racing sport and everything, because we're on TV, we're nationally known, you know, the World of Outlaws with Steve Kinzer and Donnie Schatz, they race here. And
yeah, you've got all the big hitters out there. Yeah.
I've been racing for the last 2 years, and I could tell you stories and stories on just how we got here. And we started a family-owned deal, and people that have $60,000 engines, we took a $4,000 motor, and we competed right next to them. But
that's something.
I just, like I said, I want to get your guys' take, and I'd love to get you involved out here at this racetrack.
Yeah, maybe we'll get out there. You know, we're big in Des Moines, Tyler, very big out that way. But, Stan, first of all, Planet X, what's your belief on that?
Well, I know that there is a stable orbit for something that has an orbital period of 3,600 years. I've calculated that myself using the standard planetary orbital calculation formula. But I have not seen anything that convinces me yet that we've got something visible. Now, as far as how close it would come if it's here, you know, in the inner planets, I doubt that it will be so close that, like, we could look up in the sky and see, you know, a thing that's bigger than the moon in the image of the sky. It may, if such a planet does exist, it may orbit around the sun very quickly. My calculations show that it wouldn't be within the inner planets, like, say, from Earth, Mars to the sun, that's inner planets. It wouldn't be in that region for over 11 years before it leaves and goes back out in its long trek out, you know, to the 75 times the distance of Earth out there in its orbit. I'm keeping an open mind about it. I get a lot of images from people. Every one of them that they've sent me so far has been an artifact in the lens system of the camera they're using. When they always have to have the sun in the image, and it produces a secondary ghost image, which they call, you know, Planet X. So from Velikovsky's work and from others that have studied the, you know, the electric universe, whatever, I think that such a thing is possible, but until I see more definite proof, I'm still kind of sitting on the fence.
And the meteors and the asteroids, it's just a matter of when, isn't it? Not if, that we're going to get hit.
Oh, I think so. I think so. Even the Bible tells us that in the last days of this age, which we're in now. You just look at the moon and look at Mars and look at the impacts there, some shallow, some deep, you know, some vertical, straight on. The stuff is out there. I mean, there's over 4,500 catalog items that are Earth killer things that are still floating around, and they've maybe tracked 40% of those, I think, and that's the ones that they can tell are out there because of disturbances to other nearby things in the asteroid belt or other planets. There is something out there. I mean, NASA's known this for 50 years. There's something that's pressing on the orbits of Neptune and Uranus, and it gives eccentricity to Pluto as well. And it's a massive thing, and they can calculate the approximate mass, but they can't find it. And certainly, I support the fact that there is a stable orbit out there at 75 AU, astronomical units. So, you know, let's have some
proof of this somewhere. If it's in our inner system now, even in the southern hemisphere, they should be able to detect it in amateur telescopes.
But would they tell us?
Well, I'm depending on amateur.
Yeah, they would say something.
Well,
you would think.
George, I don't know whether if you can't take care of the population, you can't save them. Should you tell them, or should you just kind of
let it happen?
Let it happen and hope that you can rebuild civilization. I mean, it'll be anarchy if it does happen. If it doesn't happen, you tell about it. You'll create anarchy.
And you'll have riots if you do tell them.
Yeah, it's a hard thing to decide.
I mean, people, if you told people an asteroid was coming, we're all going to be wiped out, you know what? They would loot stores. They would have a time of their life.
Well, Holly writes about that in her book, yeah.
Prophetic perils. Stan, thanks for being on the program. Work on Holly. See if she wants to talk about the book on our show. Up next, L.A. Marzulli, Richard Shaw join us as we talk about The Watchers.